Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Wednesday, March 21st edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next half hour or so, as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me for the hump day edition of this show. You'll notice I said half hour there at the top of the recording. That's because I started doing a live recording with Brian Leonard. Blog Talk Radio decided today was a good time to take a big steaming shit. So because I have an appointment shortly after recording here, I'm just going to go ahead and record with Wes. I can't get Brian back on the line. So we're going to do a half hour with Wes Reynolds, you know, from Twitter at Wes Reynolds and the number one. We're going to chat about the left side of the bracket for March Madness and then take a look here at the two golf events, one of them already going on, the WGC Match Play. The other one beginning tomorrow, like a traditional event, the Corrales Championship down in Punta Cana. Lots of great stuff over at bangthebook.com. Make sure you check that out. My MLB betting guide available for download. I posted AL and NL Cy Young futures here today. Doug Carson's NBA picks are up. Parker Michaels will have updated NHL picks here this afternoon as well. I've got golf previews for both of those events. NASCAR preview posted as well. So over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Free pick contests, sports book reviews, free pick videos, all sorts of great stuff going on over there. One guest here joins me on this March 21st edition of Bang the Book Radio. That is Wes Reynolds at Wes Reynolds, the number one on Twitter. Wes, how's it going today, man?
Hi, Adam. Doing all right. Apparently doing better than you this morning with all the technology snafus.
Yeah, you know what? I think I'm honestly going to stop with the live recordings of the show, and I'll just record them in private and then get them edited and posted up because these problems are bullshit, and they continue to keep happening here. So I'm not really sure what to do moving forward in terms of that. But not only that, Wes, but we're supposed to get about an inch of snow overnight. We got six. So it's not a great morning here for me at all.
Yeah, it's I've had about enough of the white stuff here myself. So, I mean, it's late March now. I think we're about over that.
All right, well, we got a lot of stuff to talk about here on today's show, and we're going to try and cram this into a short amount of time. And, you know, one of the things I think I want to focus on here at the outset is, you know, this March Madness tournament has been crazy, and we're going to cover the left side of the bracket here on today's show. The top seed heading into the Sweet 16 from that left side of the bracket, number three, Michigan. All the number ones, all the number twos are gone here on the left side. And, Wes, I mean, maybe we should have seen this coming when you look at how inconsistent a lot of these top teams have been so far this year. But on the other hand, how can you see this coming?
Yeah, it's you knew that there were going to be some upsets. But, I mean, you know, because it's never happened before, I mean, nobody thought that a 16 was going to be the one. You're like, eventually it's going to happen. Eventually it's going to happen. There's just enough parity and, you know, these lower majors, I mean, it used to be in the 80s and in the early 90s, you know, some of these ones over 16s, I mean, were 28, 30-point favorites and above. Now they're in the low 20s, and, I mean, you saw with Kansas and Penn, Kansas was less than a 15-point favorite over a 16 seed. So, I mean, you're seeing that the gap, I think, in that regard – has narrowed, but yeah, it doesn't surprise me that these upsets have happened. I mean, maybe in terms of how the games played out, the fashion that they kind of played out. I mean, when you see a team blow a 20-point lead in the second half, like Cincinnati did, and I mean, and that's how I think you kind of get this chaos in these brackets where it doesn't hold the form where it's a one against the four and a three against the two in the Sweet 16 like it's set up to be.
So let me ask you this here, in terms of this March Madness then, with the style of betting that you do, high volume, you play some full games, but you play a lot of first halves and second halves, has all this chaos been good for you, or has this been something where, you know, virtually nothing going status quo, so to speak, has actually hurt you?
It actually has been good for me because it's provided a lot. It's provided a lot of value, and I mean, you get different segments of bettors involved, and you know, sometimes it knocks lines out. It knocks lines out of whack, or it makes a line look too almost too good to be true or too easy, and you can play on or against that sentiment. And so this has actually been good for me. I've actually had a pretty good tournament this year.
Well, it's good. Good to hear that, and hopefully things continue for you here in the Sweet 16. And, you know, this is really not the matchup that we expected in Atlanta coming up here on Thursday night. Kansas State takes on Kentucky. A lot of people expecting Virginia to at least get to this point down in Atlanta and then wind up having a problem with either Arizona or Kentucky. As it turns out, Arizona blown out in the first round. Kentucky navigates through Davidson in what was a tough game, eventually wears down Buffalo, wins that game by 20. So now they draw Kansas State. And Kansas State, a team here that, you know, they battled against Creighton. They picked up a win that they, you know, really deserved in that one. Played down to UMBC in that second game. They played like a team that was terrified to lose. They didn't want to be that team that becomes the, you know, trivia question of, well, how did the number 16 seed get to the Sweet 16? Well, they beat Kansas State to do it. They didn't want to be that team. So, you know, now we kind of look at Kansas State in a little bit of a different light, I think, heading into this game in Atlanta, where Kentucky's a 5.5-point favorite.
Yeah, I mean, I think Kansas State, you know, I mean, I wrote a column last week that when I was going through the first round games when they played Creighton, that Kansas State kind of is a little bit like a bowl of plain oatmeal. And, you know, they're not flashy. Sometimes they win ugly games, but they're a team that can really defend. And, you know, sometimes being able to defend like that is enough. And, you know, Kentucky is actually who I had coming through this bracket. And I'm not bragging on my bracket because I've lost two Final Four teams already. But, you know, you look at Kentucky, this is who I had coming out. I just felt that they looked like a team that was kind of coming together at the right time. And John Calipari, I think, was actually genuine saying how much he liked this team. And I felt that they were going to come out of this region. I still do, but I don't think it's going to be as easy as it looks on paper. And, you know, Kansas State, I really like their defense. A lot is going to depend on if Dean Wade, who I think is their best offensive player, is going to play. He did not play the first two rounds, but he may be able to go for this game, and I think that's going to make a big difference. So I haven't played the game, but I would probably lean to Kansas State the points. I think Kentucky wins, but I think if you're getting 5.5 or 6, that might be a little generous.
Well, and what's going to be really interesting about this game is, you know, as I just mentioned, I mean, you've got this, this Kansas State team that, you know, a lot of people didn't think much about during the season or when the brackets came out. A lot of people kind of looked at them and said, well, Creighton, but then they'll be done against Virginia. And then obviously Virginia gets knocked off, and they get this game where they're actually a 10-point favorite in the NCAA tournament against UMBC. And, you know, they were only ahead by 2 late in that game and then kind of put it away at the free throw line and all that. But public opinion, public perception of Kansas State, not going to be high. Public perception of Kentucky is always high because they're Kentucky. So the fact that we're seeing this line move down here, this looks like your prototypical sharp versus public type of game where you've got, you know, the wise guys and the numbers guys out there going ahead and grabbing Kansas State, and we know exactly where the public's going to align for this one.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, that's where I think you can take advantage here, because I think people are always going to look, you know, at recency bias, which we talked about ad nauseum here, but people are going to look at the last game that a team played, and if a team really slaughtered a team in the second round, they're going to want to bet them again in the Sweet 16, and then you have teams that, and we'll cover this in a later game, that we're going to discuss in the segment. And then teams want to go against teams that kind of, you know, just barely squeaked by.
Well, and this should be an interesting one here. Kentucky should have a little bit of a home court advantage, I would think, here. I don't know how well the fan base travels from Lexington, but at least they're comfortable playing in the Southeast. Kansas State, you know, we certainly can't say that. So that should be a pretty interesting one to watch, not just to see how the game plays out, but also from a betting line standpoint. And listeners know I've got Kansas State 500-1 here. So, you know, I'm still working my way through the math, trying to decide how I want to play Kentucky in this situation, but you can be damn well sure that I'm going to go ahead and hedge that one a little bit. Let's slide down here to this first game that's going to be played in Atlanta. I'm not going chronologically. I'm just going up and or I'm just going down based on the bracket draw. Loyola Chicago and Nevada. Loyola Chicago in two very similar games, down 62-61 against Miami. They hit a three, down 62-61 against Tennessee, hit that lucky jumper that bounces front rim and finds a way to go in. All of a sudden, the Ramblers find themselves in the Sweet 16.
Yeah, and I mean they've been right there in both games. I mean, you know, you look at it and say, oh, an 11 seed in the Sweet 16, but you look at the games that they played, and they weren't very big underdogs. I mean, the Miami game was pretty much a coin flip game. I think Miami might have closed like -1 or 1.5. I mean, if that. So, and then Tennessee, I believe, was about anywhere in between. I'm trying to remember. From memory here, 3-4. I mean, Tennessee wasn't a really big favorite. So these were, you know, games that Loyola was perfectly capable of winning, and they did, and they won both on buzzer beaters. And, you know, usually that's a team you kind of want to go against. I mean, you know, when you get these double-digit seeds in the Sweet 16, you're tempted to really go against them. But I'm not sure what I want to do with this game because I kind of want to go against Nevada as well because, I mean, down in both games, having to make comebacks, the Texas, you know, wasn't obviously as pronounced and as large of a margin as the Cincinnati game being down 20-plus in the second half. I mean, that to me, I mean, nothing's going to top a 16-1 in terms of shock value, even though UMBC pretty much led throughout the second half and kept pulling away. But the Nevada result over Cincinnati was almost as much shocking because of the fact that they were down so much and that Cincinnati was such a good defense. You know, you never would have imagined that. And plus, Nevada is pretty much down to, you know, six scholarship guys playing heavy minutes. And, I mean, you just wonder, I mean, how are they able to do that with those guys playing the starters essentially playing 39 to 40 minutes in a game. And you just wonder when they're going to run out of gas here, you know, when they're not going to be able to do that, and when the energy is just going to, you know, sap from this team, if at all possible. So I'm not sure really what I want to do with this game, but I would probably actually lean with the lower seed Loyola here.
Well, and for our listeners that are wondering about Brian Leonard, I just talked to him. We're going to pre-record tomorrow afternoon for Friday's show. I have to pre-record Friday's show. And like I said, I may just pre-record every show at this point and then post them after the fact. But we'll chat with Philip Rosenreich about NBA and Brian Leonard about MLB coming up here on that Friday show. But going back to this game here with Loyola Chicago and Nevada, one of the things I think is interesting that you, I think, kind of talked around a little bit, but we can expand on it a little bit more here, is that when you look at the other side of the bracket, you've got Villanova, who's been through this before. You've got West Virginia, who's played in big games. Texas Tech and Purdue have both played in big games, whether they're conference games or in postseason. Well, not necessarily Texas Tech for postseason play, but a lot of big-time conference games. Kansas, same thing. Big games, used to the spotlight, used to the headlines. Syracuse and Duke, same thing. In this game, though, you're in this left side of the bracket specifically, you know, you've got Kentucky that's used to it. You've got Gonzaga that's used to it. Michigan's kind of become that team now with their back-to-back Big Ten tournament runs. But in this game here, you have two teams that really don't know how to handle this situation. They don't really know how to deal with the new expectations of being a Sweet 16 team, of the highs of coming, you know, for Nevada, coming back from those two deficits, getting to this point, Loyola Chicago, coming back off of those two buzzer beaters to keep this storybook season going. You kind of wonder how they're going to show in the first half of that game on Thursday because, I mean, all that adrenaline, all that, I don't like to use the word momentum, but all that, you know, all those positive feelings and everything, those are gone now. You basically wiped the slate clean on Thursday.
Yeah, and I mean, you could certainly see, you know, I would guess a relatively slow start, perhaps, for these teams. I mean, there were a lot of second-half unders in the first round, and then it kind of regressed a little bit back to the mean in the second round. But, you know, it would certainly not shock me to see slow starts here playing in this game. And, you know, because it's a different level, because they've had all the media obligations this week, and, you know, the fact that there's stories, the fact that they're not technically supposed to be here, but yet somehow they are. So, I mean, just the demands on your time and, you know, traveling from one place, then traveling back home, and now traveling to Atlanta. So, I mean, it's, you know, it's a lot for teams, like you were saying, that are not used to this. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how they handle that. I mean, I could certainly see a first half under in Loyola and Nevada.
So here in the South region, just specifically the South region, do you have any of these four teams from a futures standpoint?
I do have Kentucky that I took before the tournament at 40-1. I just felt that was good value because I really did like Kentucky over Arizona because I didn't like Arizona's defense. And I mean, I think the Buffalo game showed that to be a good reason not to like Arizona, but, I thought Kentucky was going to end up, you know, probably playing Virginia in the Sweet 16, which now they're not. But, you know, Virginia always kind of worried me a little bit throughout the season is, you know, are they going to ever get down in a game, which they had done a couple times during the season against Florida State and Louisville, but ended up finding their way to coming back. But are they going to get down in a game in the tournament where it's like, you know what, they just can't come back because, I mean, you got a team that's a really good defense, they can defend them really well, and then also out-athletes them, which I think Kentucky would fall into that category. So that was kind of my reasoning for taking Kentucky. I mean, the bracket, I mean, the draw is set up for Kentucky. But, I mean, with this tournament, I mean, you never take any game for granted as we've seen so far.
So what's your play there with Kentucky at 40-1? Are you going to leave it alone, or are you going to take a piece of Kansas State here, you know, with them being in the plus 200, plus 215 range? What's your play there from a futures standpoint, you think?
You know, I might do a small hedge there. I mean, I'm still kind of debating it because all my other futures, with the exception of Texas A&M, which I took preseason, are on the other side of the draw. They're actually all in the same region, Villanova, Purdue, and Texas Tech, ironically enough, the top three seeds in the East region. So, you know, I played seven before the season, and then I added Kentucky before the tournament. So, I mean, I still have like five alive in the draw. You know, I may take a little piece of Kansas State money line here, you know, just something small to at least come up with something. I still think Kentucky's going to win the game. But and then if we get to the Elite Eight, I'm not really sure what I'm going to do, because I think if Kentucky gets to the Elite Eight, they're going to the Final Four. I think this is really their tough game.
Yeah, I think so too. And it's kind of interesting to me because I think you've got a spot like that in the East region. Obviously, we're talking about the left side of the bracket, but I think this is Villanova's tough game. I think they beat either Texas Tech or Purdue. I don't know what the lines look like in those. Maybe Villanova -5, something like that. I think this is their hard game. This is the one that they have to get through if you've got that Villanova future. And I certainly think that, you know, Kentucky, I mean, maybe Nevada can beat Kentucky. I don't think Loyola Chicago with their style of play can do it. Maybe Nevada, if they can get that offense really going. But as you mentioned, they don't run very deep. They've only got about six guys that play, you know, almost all of their minutes. So, you know, that would be a tough turnaround for them, especially being in Atlanta, long way from home, pro-Kentucky crowd, all that type of thing. So let's slide down to the bottom of the bracket here. We'll go out west to Los Angeles. And this is not really the Sweet 16 game that we expected here in this region. Gonzaga, we expected to be there. They wound up knocking off Ohio State and UNC Greensboro, who they did struggle with in the first round there in Boise. But now the Zags take on Florida State here, so they stay out on the West Coast. But, again, this is one of those games where a little bit of the early professional involvement coming in on Florida State, Gonzaga now a 5.5-point favorite. I'm not as surprised by the Kentucky move as I am by this one, with Florida State getting a little bit of love here.
Yeah, and especially because it looked like Gonzaga really was kind of the, if you monitor some of the television pundits and some of the analysts throughout, it really kind of looked like Gonzaga was really the trendy pick to get out of the region. I mean, they didn't believe in Xavier, and they were proven to be right about that. But, yeah, I mean, with I think most people would still probably pick, if they looked at just these four teams, would consider Gonzaga to get out of the region, because they've now gotten the monkey off their back where they've actually done it. And they made the national championship game and were the national runner-up. So, you know, they would probably be the favorite to get out of this region, yet you're seeing some movement the other way on Florida State. And Florida State is one of those teams that, you know, are very tough to figure out, because if you look at them and you didn't know what team they were, what school they represented, and you look at these dudes that they were, like, getting off the bus to go into the arena, and you're like, well, they should beat the hell out of everybody, because they usually have size and they're usually very long and athletic, and that's also the case this year. And you know, they, at the end of the day, they're more of a defensive team, and Leonard Hamilton's teams have always been, and I don't think he's a great coach, but I mean, I think his teams have always defended, and I think getting stopped late in the game against Xavier kind of brought him back in, and then when McCura got that fifth foul, you could almost sense the momentum switch against Xavier here and switch toward Florida State. And I don't necessarily disagree with the move here, because I think probably Gonzaga is a little bit overpriced based on perception here. I would want to wait for it to go back up a little bit before I would take Florida State, now that it's down as low as 5.5. I mean, you would want as close to 7 as you could possibly get, but I don't necessarily disagree with the move here per se.
Well, I think this is an interesting one, because, you know, one of the things that I considered coming into this game, one of the reasons why I think the line is a little bit low, is because I think Mark Few is just so much better of a coach than Leonard Hamilton. And you have this situation now where Gonzaga's got time to prep for them. You know, I think if it's a quick turnaround, something like that, I don't know if coaching matters as much. I think at that point you're just kind of looking for talent to be talent, and that's what you're kind of, you know, hanging your hat on. But with the layoff here, to where Gonzaga can actually – look at Florida State, break down some of their sets, figure out what the Seminoles are doing. You know, I think that's where you get the Gonzaga advantage here. And believe me, I know Florida State is very athletic, lots of length, very tall. But I think that one of the things about Gonzaga here, too, that you have to consider is, I mean, Florida State plays in the ACC. Were they a great team in the ACC? No, not really. But Gonzaga, out there in the West Coast Conference, they virtually play one team in conference play every year. And, you know, they had trouble defending Ohio State in the second half of that game. Obviously, they had trouble with UNC Greensboro as well. That's something I think you kind of have to look at and weigh a little bit in this game is, you know, Gonzaga faces a team that's very long, very athletic. They're not very polished. They're not very fundamentally sound. You know, is what Gonzaga does well enough to really help them here in this spot? I think that's the decision that you have to make.
Yeah, and I mean, if you looked at it, it's something that I played. I actually played Gonzaga Moneyline second round, and it got there despite losing the lead briefly in the second half after they got out to a 15-0 run against Ohio State. But, you know, that's one of the good things for Gonzaga is they can get out to those runs. And I really liked them against Ohio State in that spot simply because they got their scare in the first round against Greensboro. You know, this is a team that they were well over double-digit favorites over, and they really never really got away from them. You know, Greensboro kind of always stayed in the game, and, you know, when a team gets that happen to them, I tend to like to play on them second round because I think people with the recency bias kind of look too much into vulnerability. that they see before, and people are going to go off what they just saw, you know, more than likely to make their bet in the next game instead of maybe taking a more holistic view of the entire season.
All right, one more game to look at here on the left side of the bracket, and then we'll transition over to golf for a few minutes. And again, for those that were looking for Brian Leonard, we'll hear from him on Friday as we talk some baseball on our pre-recorded show. But this is a real good one here, Michigan and Texas A&M. And I'll be very curious to see what happens with the betting action in this one. You've got Michigan, a 2.5 or 3-point favorite out there, depending on where you look. And, you know, what Texas A&M did to North Carolina was, I want to call it stunning, but when you look at the upside of this team coming into the year, maybe it's just a team that's finally playing up to its ceiling. Now, the fact that they did it in Charlotte was even more impressive, but this is a very lengthy, very athletic type of team taking on a Michigan team that, you know, wins with defense, which is what Texas A&M did in that North Carolina game. They won with defense. And a Michigan team that's only scored 125 points in two games here in this tournament. So, you know, do we get recency bias with A&M off that North Carolina win? Do people remember 3-4 weeks ago to when Michigan was winning the Big Ten Conference Tournament? This is a very, very interesting game for a lot of different reasons.
Yeah, this is actually, I think, for me personally, Texas Tech Purdue, obviously, as well. I think this is the most interesting game probably to handicap, and one of the hardest ones. In full disclosure, I do have a Texas A&M future of 100-1 that I took in before the season started. And, you know, Texas A&M was kind of one of those teams that really disappointed this year. And, you know, people kind of forgot about. But if you hearken back to the opening game of the season where they played on that Air Force base in Germany, and they beat West Virginia by like 1,000. I mean, they absolutely killed West Virginia in that opening game. But this A&M team, I think, is finally healthy now, and I've been riding them in this tournament because, you know, they don't have Dwayne Wilson, but this is as healthy as they've been because they've had dudes miss games with injuries. They've had a couple guys with a few game suspensions. So, I mean, you know, they haven't really had a lot of games with their full lineup. And now they finally have it, and you see what they're capable of. I mean, I thought this was a dark horse national title contender before the season. And, you know, now they're playing up to their potential. But now people see what they've done with North Carolina. And I almost get the sense that this is kind of a, you know, and I hate to use this term, but almost like a little bit of a public underdog here. Because now you see what they did to North Carolina. And now they're playing a Michigan team that probably should be at home cleaning out their lockers. I mean, I felt they really got outplayed by Houston. And, you know, just Houston missed some foul shots late, and Michigan hits a big shot and advances. I mean, but I think that could give a little bit of value on Michigan, and I'm going to play Michigan. You know, if it loses, I still have a future in the Elite Eight. That has a chance to go to the Final Four. But I think, you know, I probably play Michigan money line laying 2.5. I usually will play money lines when the spread is 3 or below. But, I mean, I think that's where you get the recency bias that can play into your advantage, because I think a lot of people will like Texas A&M because it's like, well, they just beat a team that's better than Michigan, which I think most people would perceive North Carolina to be. So they should be able to handle Michigan, who, you know, hasn't scored very much, like you were saying, and shouldn't even, you know, probably be here in this round, but for some reason they are. And, you know, I think coaching, I think you've got two pretty good coaches here, and I also think, you know, I think Beilein's one of the better ones left in the draw, but I'm probably going to go with Michigan in this game, you know, maybe to get off my Texas A&M future.
Did you hedge that A&M future at all against North Carolina, or did you let that one go?
No, I actually kind of doubled down. I played Texas A&M plus the 7 in the second round. I actually didn't get the best number because it went up to 7.5 and played some money line on A&M. I really like their matchup, and a lot of people really liked Providence against them in the first round because, like you said, you know, recency bias. Texas A&M was the 8th seed in the SEC tournament and got bounced by Alabama on a Colin Sexton buzzer beater. And while that was happening, Providence was beating Creighton, beating Xavier, and taking Villanova to overtime in the Big East Championship. So the perception was so high on Providence in that first round where they almost became kind of a public underdog, and that line dropped a little bit on Texas A&M, and I just thought, you know, this is the better team, and I think the perception on them is so low because of the disappointment, but now they finally got guys together, you know, and I just saw some value on that. But I wish that A&M was playing Houston here instead of Michigan, because I would for certainly be just keeping riding Texas A&M here. But they got a Michigan team who looks like a vulnerable favorite, and sometimes the vulnerable favorites are the most dangerous ones.
One other question I want to ask you here for college basketball, and then we'll spend a few minutes on golf. And that's, you mentioned you have Texas Tech and Purdue, both of them in the futures market. I do as well. So I'm curious to get your thoughts here. I think I'm just going to let it ride and kind of, you know, take the fact that I've got an Elite Eight team here no matter what. Is that your play, or are you going to look to, you know, possibly do something with one of those two sides there?
Yeah, I don't know what I'm going to do with the side. I mean, it might be something where I don't play anything at all, or maybe, depending on how the game plays out, play a second half. Because, I mean, I think the dynamic of obviously the Haas injury really kind of plays into that. And Purdue was able to win that first game without him over Butler. Didn't cover, but, you know, led the majority of the second half and really, I think, deserved the win there. But now this is your second game without Haas. So how is that going to be? Vince Edwards had, I believe, a minor injury. He should be good to go. But, you know, had a minor injury in practice the other day. But you got to wonder how this team is going to play if Haas can't go. And, I mean, there is a possibility that he still might be able to go. I mean, they couldn't get the brace approved in time. I mean, he's still working out with the team, but, I mean, he probably, and Matt Painter made it clear that he wasn't going to likely be able to play against Butler, but there's just a lot of unknowns in that game. And so that might be a game, unless you've got a really convincing argument one way or the other, to perhaps stay away from. I mean, I know that I'm at least guaranteed an Elite Eight team, and if Villanova can get through, then you know you're guaranteed a Final Four team. So that's probably a game I'll sit out.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see what happens here, because no knock on Lavelle Jordan, who I think is a pretty good head coach there for Butler, and he's done good things, you know, keeping up the standards that Chris Holtman and Brad Stevens set for this program. But Beard is a much different type of coach here, to the point where I think he can exploit some of those weaknesses for Purdue. I think he's going to attack Harms and get to the basket and try to put Edwards in foul trouble. And, you know, those are things that Butler had a little bit of difficulty with. Now, they did put Edwards into foul trouble when he picked up that late third in the first half. And, you know, at that point, I kind of thought to myself, well, do I want to make a play here live to protect my Purdue investment? Eventually, I did wind up doing that in the second half. But, you know, that's something I think that you look at here in this one, is Beard may be able to take advantage more so than Jordan was able to. And also, there's that reputation out there about Matt Painter. So there's a lot going on with that game, and it's easy for us because we both have futures involvement on it. But for other people that maybe have one or the other, or just looking at it from a pure handicap standpoint, it is a tricky game.
Yeah, and I think Texas Tech is the more athletic team, a little bit more athletic than Butler, and you know, better defensive team and a better rebounding team. And, I mean, Purdue, even with the size, even with both Haas and Harms, you know, who are 2 7-footers plus, they really aren't great rebounders. They really don't rebound outside of their area. And, you know, they're just freakishly athletic and they can just go get rebounds with their length. And, you know, if you don't do that against Texas Tech, that could be very dangerous for you because they will do that. So, I mean, if I had to lean on the side, and, you know, it's like, okay, man, you got to give me a pick, you know, no option, you can't have him and Hall, then I would probably lean to Texas Tech in the game.
All right, let's talk some golf here for a few minutes. And, you know, we've got a very interesting tournament here with a much different format. That's the WGC Dell Match Play. It already started on Wednesday. I know that you made some picks to win the groups and you made some other picks in that regard. But, you know, one of the things that's different here about this one, obviously, is that there's more of an emphasis on matchups. And so sort of walk us through, you know, what the different approach is here for you with a tournament like this.
Yeah, I mean, I look at different approaches in doing this, and I mean, you can't just you got to realize that there are the way this is set up is very much like a traditional tournament bracket in anything where you have Group One, which is the top ranked player. That's Dustin Johnson's group would play the Group 16 group, and then the 8 versus 9. It's very similar to your NCAA bracket. Now, last year in this event, I think only 5 of the 16 seeded players, and that means the top 16, where they were the top seed in their pools, actually made it out. And that doesn't mean that there weren't really good players that made it out that weren't the top seed. But, I mean, you know, it's very hard, I think, in this event, and there's not a lot of value in this event, especially in the futures market, to take to take favorites. I mean, let's say you're taking, and I forget what he was. I think he was maybe a little bit less than 10-1. You know, can Rory McIlroy win the match play? Well, of course he could win the match play. He's done it before. But, you know, you got to take a guy, you know, less than 10-1 to win 6 matches. And I mean, and that's really hard to do. I mean, you can have a bad day and get knocked out or lose in pool play or in tournament play and get knocked out. So, I mean, from a future standpoint, I take a lot of medium to longer shots in this. I just don't think that in this event there's a lot of value in terms of taking chalk. So that was kind of how I approached in the futures market. And then I looked at individual matchups. Got one going. I don't have the score in front of me, but that's already started, where I took Luke List over Justin Thomas at about plus 160. Because you know, Thomas is a guy that's ranked second in the world, clearly is a threat to win every tournament he plays, but he doesn't have the best record in this event. And then you get a guy like Luke List, who just lost to him in the playoff down in Palm Beach at the Honda. So you got to think, hey, I get a crack here at Justin Thomas. Maybe he's going to have a little bit of extra motivation here. And you just look for the matchup standpoints. I mean, this course is not a very long course, so it kind of keeps a lot of guys in play. I mean, you've seen bombers do well in this course, and you've seen ball strikers do well. So there's really no advantage. So, you know, I think that gives value on some of these underdogs in these different individual matchups. And then, obviously, as you go into tomorrow and Friday, continuing kind of that round-robin pool play, you'll have to use a little bit what you saw in the previous round. And, I mean, if somebody has, like, an outrageous strokes gain putting maybe on the first day, then you can maybe play against that on the second day, because that's more than likely not going to hold up.
See, that's kind of the opposite of the way that I thought about it, and you're a much better golf handicapper than I am. So for our listeners out there, I would certainly defer to Wes's ideas more so than mine. But one of the things that I was looking at here, and in terms of, you know, looking at the winners, and I get what you're saying, because there's not a whole lot of value in taking those, you know, plus 800 types of shots. But at the same time, you know, if you have to win – you know, 5 matches or 6 matches here over the course of this tournament, the best players in the world are the best players in the world because they're the most consistent ones. You know, so you can have a guy, maybe Luke List can go out there and shoot a 62 one day and maybe win one of these matches. But, you know, in a stroke play event, that might give him 3 or 4 shots on some other guys in the field. In this, it's basically just one match. So my thought process was to kind of go with some of the lower prices, some of the chalkier guys, because the chances of them being more consistent over 5 or 6 days, you know, higher than some of those other guys. But I think that that's the nice thing here about a tournament like this, is that, you know, we can have 2 very different viewpoints and, you know, see which one of ours, you know, winds up working this year and which one, you know, could be the other one next year.
Yeah, and I mean, and looking at this, I mean, I didn't play guys that were 200 or 250-1. I mean, I played guys like Patrick Reed at 30-1, guys like Cabrera Bayo at, I think I got him at 60-1. I mean, Pack and players that have produced in this type of event. So, I mean, and I think when you look at the value into getting out of the groups, I mean, you know, I felt probably one of the better bets was to take Rory McIlroy. I think he was maybe minus 110 or minus 120 to get out of the group. And it's like, I'm a hell of a lot more sure about that than I would be maybe having an 8-1 on him to win the event. And that's what I think makes this kind of cool, is that you could still, I think, take like a favorite to get out of the group, where it's like, okay, these guys probably aren't a threat to this top player. So I could still bet on the top player, and I'm not, you know, and I'm kind of reducing that fact. I was like, okay, this is over 3 matches maybe instead of over 6 matches. So, I mean, there's a lot of different approaches you can take in this thing. I mean, some people that I know that are sharp guys don't really deal with the futures. They just do matchups throughout the tournament and just look at the lineup for the day and just go about playing their matchups on a day-to-day basis throughout this thing.
Well, and I think that, again, I mean, this is such a unique event. It's so different. There are different ways to attack it, and I certainly think that, you know, you do a lot of great handicapping when it comes to golf. I know you pay a lot of attention to, you know, what happened the day before, and you get a lot of instant course form data here that you can use to your advantage. So one other thing I would mention here about this tournament before we move on to the one in Punta Cana to wrap up the show for today is that, you know, if you run deep in this thing, you're playing a lot of golf here this weekend. You got to play, well, I think it's twice on Saturday and then once on Sunday if you wind up making it, you know, into the Final Four and being one of those guys playing for the championship. So when you look ahead to next week's event, the Houston Open, which is the final tune-up for the Masters, and that course does have some similarities to Augusta National, maybe you can use the workload that some guys had here this weekend to your favor in matchups next weekend.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, some of the guys are playing. I mean, Houston's getting a good field next week. And actually, Justin Rose, who's not playing this week, and Jordan Spieth, who is playing this week, they actually both just committed, were late commits to this Houston field. And so you're going to get a pretty solid field for a week before a major. I mean, I think it's if you look at some of the other tournaments right before a major, like Memphis, you know, gets an okay field, but not a great field. But this one has a really good one. And, you know, looking at a few of the guys like Justin Rose and Stenson that took this week off, you know, you might be able to find a little bit of value, particularly if one of these guys runs deep and then it's like, oh, he played so well the week before, so we want to absolutely bet on him the next week, versus the guy that has a little bit of rest. And I would tend to kind of go the other way on that.
All right, we got two events here this week, because the WGC match play only available to the top 64 in the official world golf ranking. And as guys back out, you get 65, 66, 67, and so on into the field. But we've got an alternate event then that all the other guys will get to play in. This one's out at Corrales Golf Club in Punta Cana. First time that this has been a PGA Tour event. The last 2 years it's been an event for the Web.com Tour. This is a beast of a course. 7,670 yards, second longest course the players will play this year after the South Course at Torrey Pines. So I imagine that factored into your handicapping quite a bit.
Yeah, it has. And in full disclosure, I'm actually working on this event this afternoon because I just had so much going on. So I don't have anybody. I haven't really been able to post any plays. I mean, it's a long course, but it's actually fairly flat. It's a relatively easy one. I mean, the you know, for the length, it's a beast, but, I mean, it's a course where you can score low on. I mean, the primary defense really on this course is the wind, you know, if the wind blows. I mean, you have some pretty wide fairways here. You've got good greens. I mean, it's got bunkers, and there's a few oceanside holes here, but, I mean, you know, this is a course where, you know, you can really be, it's going to reward aggressiveness. And, you know, now if the wind blows, it can maybe bring the guys a little bit to their knees. But, you know, just looking at the course, I mean, I think, you know, shooting, if you're not shooting kind of in that 4 to 6 under range per round, you may be falling behind here.
So I know that you're still working through your handicap of this one. Emiliano Grillo's the favorite, +810. Then Jim Furyk, a name that we haven't seen at the top of the board, at least the odds board, in a while here, 16-1. Bunch of guys on down from there. But these are a lot of guys that either haven't won at the PGA Tour level, or, you know, maybe won several years ago, kind of fell off the pace a little bit. Because as I mentioned, you know, the top 64, basically the top 70 in the official world golf ranking, play that match play event. So you're forced here to take some smaller prices on some guys that, you know, maybe aren't very consistent, maybe haven't won in a long time. How do you sort of approach that to where, you know, in a regular PGA Tour event, you're talking about guys like a Patrick Reed or maybe a Brooks Koepka or, you know, something like that at 40-1. Here you're talking about guys like Robert Garrigues and Corey Connors, who had a very good run a few weeks ago, David Lingmerth, Harold Varner III is 50-1, and he's, you know, really struggled on the PGA Tour this year. So how do you sort of navigate that balance?
Yeah, and plus the fact that you really don't have a ton of course form here. I mean, some of these guys played the Web.com event, which is why somebody like Nate Lashley, who won this event last year on the Web.com Tour, is getting bet. But then, you know, you're really kind of a little bit more prone to having to go with recent form. And then you see that he's missed his last three cuts on the PGA Tour. So, I mean, you really, I think, I usually prefer course form over recent form, and I made that observation last week when I ended up not playing Henrik Stenson, who, you know, has had some injuries and had some illness. He's kind of been a little bit inconsistent lately. And then all of a sudden he goes to Bay Hill and he's a contender for the win, didn't end up winning, but was certainly right up there all weekend. And, you know, course form to me, I always like that a little bit better than recent form, but you don't have a lot of course form here. So you have to go kind of a combination of recent form in terms of how these guys have played. And, you know, going down the graph here, you're seeing a lot of guys that maybe have missed cuts. So you kind of got to go a little bit on hunches as well.
Well, speaking of guys that we don't know too much about here, and you'll have to follow Wes on Twitter, at Wes Reynolds in the number one, to take a look at what he likes for this one, playing some matchups and I'm sure some futures. Tony Romo. So Tony Romo out there right now, 8,000-1. He was 10,000-1 when I wrote up my preview. So somebody's throwing those novelty bets here on Tony Romo. The dude's a solid player. There's no question about that. He's a guy that got here on a sponsor exemption. He's got a handicap better than zero, so that's why he's eligible to play here in this event on that sponsor exemption. Realistically, and I sent you over a list of props that I saw over at DSI Sportsbook. I'll try to bring those up as we're talking here. Realistically, what do you think we should expect from Tony Romo this weekend?
Yeah, I would say that he's more than likely not going to make the cut. And, I mean, like you were saying, the length of this course, and then, you know, he's a strong, powerful guy, but I mean, the length of this course, I just think that you have so many long holes here that there's going to be some, you know, he's going to make big numbers, I think, on a couple holes where he's going to make a 7 or he's going to make an 8. I mean, this is just a totally different type of event to play this event. I'm sure his goal really would probably be to make the cut. But to make the cut, you're probably going to have to shoot, I'm guessing, you know, 4 or 5 under over 2 days just to make the cut here. And, I mean, I just don't see him doing that. So, I mean, in terms of some of these props, I didn't look a lot into them, but I'd probably be saying, you know, is he going to have a score over – I'm actually trying to pull him back up myself because I didn't know we were going to talk about this event. But I am going to probably lean more towards overs in terms of, you know, will he take higher than a seven, or will he make a triple bogey or more than a double bogey? You know, those would be something that I might lean toward the yes on.
Yeah, I think so too. And the list that I sent over to you here from DSI Sportsbook, highest score in any round for Romo, over under 80.5, and of course, par 72 here on this long course. Highest score on any single hole, over under 7, that's minus 15 both ways. Lowest score in any round, 75.5. Lowest score on any hole, over under 2.5. So will he, basically, will he birdie a par 3 there is what we're looking at. Minus 3,000 on no to make the cut. But you know what? I mean, hey, for one thing, good for him to be able to be in this event. And I know a lot of people kind of scoffed at Steph Curry being in a Web.com Tour event last summer, and he shot 74 in both of his rounds. So, you know, he went out there and acquitted himself nicely. I don't know what Romo's going to do here on this long course, but you know what? It's going to be a thrill for him, and kudos to him for, you know, I mean, this has been something he's openly talked about as being a dream of his, to play a PGA Tour event. I know he's played Pro-Ams before and all that, but so that'll be the big story here from this one, regardless of who wins this tournament. But there are some prop betting options out there. And look, if there's value to be had on something, we're going to find it here on this show.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, and I don't think he's going to shoot any rounds in the 80s. I think that this is an easy enough course. But, you know, this is a course I could see him shooting, you know, mid-70s or something like that. But I don't think he's going to embarrass himself. But, I mean, I still think even against a weaker field, even against an alternate event here, you know, it's going to be tough for him. And if he makes the cut, I think that's going to be very, very impressive.
Well, again, for our listeners out there, make sure you follow Wes on Twitter at Wes Reynolds and the number one. I'm sure he'll have some stuff for the NIT, CBI, CIT tonight, and then also the golf tournament starting up tomorrow night. Wes, I appreciate your time. I appreciate your flexibility here with the technical issues that I've had this morning. We'll talk to you again next week.
No problem, man. Thanks for having me on.
Good stuff there today with Wes Reynolds. And again, so basically what happened here this morning is that I started recording with Brian Leonard. We got about 15 minutes or so in, and then Blog Talk Radio kicked me off, said connection could not be established. I couldn't call back in and restart the show. So I apologize if you've got that abbreviated segment. I think I deleted it in time. So if you do have that, I apologize. But we will get Brian on the show on Friday. I will record with him tomorrow. And then we'll have Brian and Philip Rossman-Reich from Orlando Magic Daily on that pre-recorded Friday show. Coming up on Thursday, Brad Powers and Ralph Michaels, we're going to chat NCAA tournament with both of them. Also look at NIT, CBI, CIT with Rolf. We'll do a little bit of college football with Brad. Like I said, I think I'm done with the live recordings here. There have been far too many problems with Blog Talk Radio. And maybe for the upcoming seasons, you know, we'll try to do something different. And I may just do my Bettors Box recordings with Hangouts on Air and then post them to our Blog Talk Radio channel. But I can't keep doing this bullshit where the show keeps screwing up and I have to change on the fly, make adjustments. You know, I got an appointment that I'm trying not today. So, you know, my apologies to everybody for the problems that we've had. Believe me, I'm more frustrated about it than you are. But thanks to everyone for sticking with us and to my guests for being so fantastic here with these things that have been out of my control. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And I will talk to you again tomorrow.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.